Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wamanjika come with a purpose to our beautiful home, the lands of the two great bays. My name is Pavanata Dr. Carolyn Briggs. I am the elder of the Yilikitwilam clan of the Bunwurrung. I'm here today representing my ancestors. We are today meeting on the lands of the Nargi tree in the city of Port Phillip, known as Yuruk. And on the lands of my ancestors, we pay our respects to those who came before us and those who came after us, our futures, our Yurrumboi. We are here today to celebrate NAIDOC. This year's theme is, always was, always will be. As a member of the Yilikitwilam clan of the Bunwurrung, Melbourne's First People, I am pleased to be able to welcome you here today. We are here to recognise the commitment you've made here today in paying respects to the spirit of this land and its First People.
That's the voice of Bunwurrung Elder, Ngawit, Auntie Dr. Caroline Briggs, performing her version of Welcome to Country at this year's NAIDOC Week, a ceremony where she welcomes audience members to Bunwurrung Country, where this very podcast is made, here in Melbourne. Welcome to Country ceremonies like this are performed by local Indigenous leaders all over Australia every day in over 500 Indigenous nations that make up our land. They are performed before sporting events, launches, performances, meetings, parliament, and I think you could safely say they've now become the backbone of the social fabric of Australia. But where did this contemporary version of a ceremony that has been performed for thousands and thousands of years by Australia's First Nations peoples originate? It might just have something to do with a legendary activist, agitator, and educator.
So, what's this scurrilous accusation that people have made about me? And where did you hear this?
Where did I hear it? All right. Well, the scurrilous accusation of which you speak is that you were one of the main instigators for the first contemporary version of Welcome to Country at a festival, the Aquarius Festival, back in 1973.
At Nimbin.
Do you remember?
I suspected that's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yes, but I deny everything.
We'll get to the bottom of that one in a minute. This is Our Place, a podcast that aims to explore the designs of everyday Australian life as a way to explore what is Australian culture today. If culture is how we tell our stories to each other and also share who we are with the world, then what is that story right now? And how can we use that story to create a new and positive narrative for the future? Before we begin, I reckon we need a little Welcome to Country 101. The ceremony itself dates back thousands of years and it was performed to welcome others who were moving through from other nations on this continent. It was a way to make newcomers to the area if they were passing through for, say, such things as initiation ceremonies or marriage, things like that. It would allow them to understand that place and feel a connection to the land and its stories and its people. Auntie Carolyn Briggs says that Welcome to Country was kind of like a passport for Aboriginal people travelling through the different areas.
Yeah, like a passport that gives you permission. It's likened to a passport. And you're being accepted because you've kept safe as you travel. I think people want to make sense of their world that they now live in. And if you don't have the right tools to offer these little people, young people, older people, I think they're starting to look for it. People are looking for a welcome to country.
So I guess you could say the contemporary welcome to country serves the same purpose in that it must be performed by a traditional elder, and it's a chance to now welcome non-Indigenous folk to the place where they are gathering. And it's a role that's inherited and taken very, very seriously.
So when you're giving a presentation like a welcome to country, it's about demonstrating your knowledge about your being, family, your country, what values, what are our guiding principles within those values, and knowing the audience. We try to embrace the audience as part of the conversation. It's about our shared history, but it's also about our celebration of our being, surviving. So that is what I believe when we do a welcome to country, and that titles, Westerners love titles. So do blackfellas, I suppose, because you can delineate who has roles and responsibilities. You know, laissez-faire. Everybody had a structure. Everybody has structures in society. And you inherit it from your family lines. You are instructed in your guiding who you are and what roles and responsibilities you have for your community, but how you ensure that knowledge is being responsible for the next generations coming up, so that they feel that they have a sense of connecting to people and country without fear. It is a responsibility. It's not, yes, you're welcome to country. We instruct them with the laws, the patterns of laws, the principles of laws, not to harm, the lands, the waterways, and particularly not our children. So you are welcome through that process if you acknowledge those laws. So They have a commitment, and their commitment is, how much do you respect this process? It's not entertainment. It's a real value, and we put that energy into it. We really put that energy into. We look at where our audiences have come from. We look at how we embrace them into the place whilst they're on our lands. And it's, you know, you go and see a Māori haka, or you go and be welcome, and now it's become just so the norm. But we want it with something that... I went to somewhere the other night and the people from India came up and said, thank you, thank you. We truly feel blessed. And I thought, if that's what it means to that individual, I've done my work.
And what of the contemporary version that we see today? What is its origin story? Enter the unmistakable voice you heard earlier of activist, agitator and educator, Professor Gary Foley, who amongst other things was involved in establishing the Aboriginal Tent Embassy in 1972, which still stands today in Canberra, and helped establish the Redfern Aboriginal Legal Service, the Aboriginal Health Service in Melbourne and the National Black Theatre. He's a certified legend who doesn't mince words, and he teaches these days at Victoria Uni. So, back to that scurrilous accusation that Gary is the instigator of the first contemporary Welcome to Country ceremony at the Aquarius Festival in Nimbin in 1973, and whether or not he's responsible.
But I deny everything. I merely stood over Graham Dunstan and Johnny Allen and told them that if they were going to do something up there, they needed to talk to the local mob. And I'm pretty sure it would have been the local mob who would have told them to do that.
Right. But will you take responsibility for putting the idea in their head, perhaps? In the
Absolutely not.
I don't believe you. So what was this hippie festival in Nimbin? Well, the Aquarius Festival was as hippie as you can imagine a festival in Nimbin could be. All about alternative living, sustainability, music, art, and even an appearance by the French tightrope walker who later walked between the Twin Towers in New York City. It was 1973, and this positions it slap bang in the middle of what's now known as the countercultural revolution, which was taking place in other Western countries too, marked by things like anti-Vietnam War protests, the rise of the civil rights movement in the US, and also a generation of young folk abandoning their conservative parents, instead deciding to turn on, tune in, and drop out, according to the advice of psychologist and LSD enthusiast Timothy Leary. Australia's countercultural revolution didn't seem to garner as many headlines here as, say, those other Australians who set off to the UK to create the controversial Oz magazine, which landed them in court in the UK for obscenity and gained them headlines all over the UK and Australia. But the countercultural revolution definitely happened here too. And the repercussions of this melding between Australia's counterculture and our first peoples who were fighting for equal rights was a significant moment that has had repercussions that are felt today.
Well, I mean, there was the huge anti-Vietnam protests, which we were involved in the late 60s. And in 71, there was the anti-apartheid stuff against the Springboks, which is the biggest thing that happened that year. And we challenged the anti-apartheid mob who had come out of the woodwork that year. And said, well, you know, don't just look at racism in South Africa, look at it here, you know. And that led to some interesting long-term alliances, you know. There's still people from the anti-apartheid movement, the anti-war movement are still friends of mine today, those that are still alive. And then we encountered the counter-country, if you want to call it that, partly through, I went to the first ever outdoor rock concert in Australia at Arimba, just north of Gosford. Billy Thorpe and the Aztecs, and John and the Id,
wow.
You know. And I was pretty off my face in that. I can't remember much about it, but there's footage of me at that being a Yahoo. Then we encountered John Allen and Graham Dunstan through. We got involved in what was then the Australian Union of Students.
Yes.
And we were pressing them to sort of do more for Aboriginal stuff. And it was through AUS that we came across Dunstan and John Allen, because I think it might have been, wasn't it AUS who part funded that first Nimbin Festival?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think.
And that's where I encountered, I mean, Dunstan's got his own version of all of this, which I've read. I don't know what Johnny Allen's is. I was tempted to ask him the other day on Facebook.
Do you agree with their versions? Does it line up with yours?
Mate, I'm a historian, and one of the first things you know about history is that history is just about interpretation and perspective. There's no such thing as truth in history.
Mm.
History is something that never happened, written by a man who wasn't there. You know, so. I think their memories are just as valid as mine, you know. I mean, in most ways, our memories sort of are fairly aligned anyway, you know. I mean, they pay due credit to the Bundjalung mob who they met up with up there in Nimbin, and who guided them through that first whistle, you know.
Sorry, so who guided them through that what?
The local traditional owners, they call them nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
They were the Bundjalung people.
Yeah.
They were my next-door neighbours. I come from just south of them.
Right.
On the north coast of New South Wales.
Right. So even though you don't necessarily want to be associated with it, it was pretty important, wasn't it, for a festival such as Aquarius, which stood for alternative lifestyle and sustainable living, to acknowledge that the local mob that owned the land were kind enough to share it with them. That's important, isn't it?
Well, that's why John Allen and Graham Dustin were different at the time, it seemed to us. I mean, bear in mind all of those big movements that I spoke of were all converging at the same moment in Australia, you know? And at the same time, there was a global, big global movement going on the same way as Black Lives Matter is now. But the big global issue on race at that moment in history was apartheid, you know. And so there was a global focus on issues to deal with race, which we managed to manoeuvre our political movement to, you know, sit in line with. And in line with that also was the big, I mean, you know, the counterculture movement, the Vietnam protest movement, the anti-apartheid movement, and the political nature of the Australian Union of Students at the time were all pretty much in line with each other, you know, momentarily in history.
Mm.
And it was the right conditions, you know, at the right time. And you're right in the sense that it represents a moment when the very beginnings of a change in attitude on the part of Australians starting to realise itself in a very minuscule way. And it's a thing that has yet to reach its adulthood. It hasn't even reached its teenagehood. It's still in its childhood, this awareness and understanding. It's still a developing little child. We've got a long way to go in Australia, you know. But I suppose you could describe that moment at Nimbin as representing, you know, the beginnings of change, but that could never have come about without the sort of alternative sort of ideology, if you like, that was being thought of as at that time by the hippies in Australia, you know. We always got on well with the hippies, us fellas in the Black Power movement, which, you know, a lot of people would have thought was a contradiction in itself. But, you know, this sort of a lot of the values that they were talking about were consistent with basic Aboriginal values of, you know, community, family, you know, anti-individualism, you know, the welfare of the group's more important than the welfare of the individual. I am my brothers and sisters' keeper sort of stuff. Not quite to the point of hands across the water we shall overcome.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Gary's right about history. It is subjective, open to interpretation, and very much about who's telling the story. He should know the history of Australia's First Peoples was essentially erased until recently. So, whatever version of history you believe, when it comes to the question of who instigated the first contemporary welcome to country, it does seem highly likely that Gary Foley's challenge to the organisers to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land at the Aquarius Festival started something big. Eyewitnesses at the time say the ceremony was conducted by two of the last known initiated men of the area, whose names I won't mention out of respect. It's fair to say, though, that 10,000 or so, mainly blow-ins from the Big Smoke and a bunch of Indigenous folk, witnessed history that day and the beginnings of something that has now become intrinsic to the fabric of our everyday life and, hopefully, has encouraged more of us to take an interest in learning about the land on which we stand and the history that it holds.
Through this, you have shown the willingness to honour the sacred ground, our Wurrungi Bik. Today, we also acknowledge the Bunwurrung country. This country is the unceded land of the Bunwurrung, who were the custodians of the land that stretches from the Wilson's Promontory all the way to the mouth of the Werribee River.
So we've got this far, but there's still a little bit more explaining to do. You see, there's an acknowledgement to country too, and this is a different thing. An acknowledgement is used in times when you don't have access to an elder, like Auntie Caroline, who you heard from before. Anyone can perform this. The hope is that an acknowledgement encourages people to take the time to think about the history of the place and its people, a history that has previously been either ignored or seriously edited out within our education systems.
Hello, I'm Lydia Thorpe. I'm a Gunai Gunitjmara Djaparung woman, and I'm a senator for Victoria for the Australian Greens.
That's Senator Lydia Thorpe. She's the first Aboriginal senator for Victoria. She gets asked a lot to perform acknowledgement to countries, and she's got her own way of making sure that it counts, that people actually take the time to learn and to listen. And it's a pretty fail-safe technique by encouraging those who ask her to do it to do it themselves.
One thing that I do when I'm asked to do an acknowledgement to country, because of course you can't do a welcome to country if you're not standing on your own country. Mm-hmm. I can only do that on Gunai and Gunitjmara lands. But one thing that I've encouraged people to do is not ask me to do an acknowledgement to country, and ask them to do one, but also to do some homework on a particular part of the country that they're on, and that they bring that truth-telling to the conversation. So, and that's challenged quite a few people, because it's easy to rattle off, you know, elders past and present and what you usually hear. I think that it needs to be more personalised, that is, relatable to the country that they're on.
That's a great idea. It's in a way encouraging people to go deeper than just something that seems to be, that it could be seen as just something to brush over.
Absolutely. Look, it's become quite generic, and it's being used by, you know, governments and bureaucrats just before they destroy country or lock up a child. So I think, you know, the whole concept of a welcome to country or an acknowledgement to country is used as, you know, a bit tokenistic in some sections, and being bastardised, in fact, you know, where you see people rolling their eyes, oh, here we go again. But I think by bringing the truth-telling element to it, will open people's eyes and give them a better understanding about the land or the water or the people whose land that is.
It's no surprise that Gary Foley is also quite suspicious of white folks and their corporations who roll out acknowledgement to countries without really giving thought to the meaning behind those statements, which is essentially a request of you to respect the traditional owners and their laws that have protected and preserved that land for thousands and thousands of years. He reckons by white folks simply reeling off the words, they get to bypass concrete and real change. So it's very important to watch what happens after the words are spoken.
Beware of tokenism. I'd say to them, beware of meaningless gestures. Observe what the people do after the, you know, welcome to country's over. Do they let you stick around? Do they give you a share of their proceeds or whatever they're on about? Do they give you back anything that belongs to you? Do they do anything for you? That's all. That's all they need to do. And they'll see for themselves. Because I know what'll happen. And therein will be a new, young, educated Aboriginal person.
And it's that new, young, educated Aboriginal person that's what keeps Gary inspired to teach and to share his knowledge. While this recent time has been fraught with protest and a reckoning of the structural racism in Australia, leading to the disproportionate number of black deaths in custody, amongst other injustices, Gary does see some light.
Well, that's one of the great things that I'm able to say to my students at this very moment, this semester. I said to him at the beginning, I said, you watch what's going on around you right now in the world. You live it in one of the really fantastic moments to be alive, you know. All sorts of things could happen. Who knows what's going to happen? And I said to him, I see in what's going on right now exactly the same sort of conditions that brought about really major change with that Aboriginal embassy in 1972, you know. And I see those same things converging, a global movement that has to do with race and history, local issues that lock into and logically fit into that global issue of race and history. Right here, unresolved issues of a major kind, and that there's a unique opportunity in what's to come. And I say to my students, you're either going to be part of it or you're going to get left behind. But, you know, be aware of what's going on around you, take notice, observe for yourself and figure yourself what needs to be done, you know, using the knowledge I've given you.
Good advice.
And so I think it's fantastic times right now, you know. It's, back then we had Nixon. We thought fucking Nixon was an evil bastard. Richard Nixon looks like a saint nowadays.
You're right. So there you have it. The origins of the contemporary Welcome to Country and some more thoughts from the bloke I reckon might well be responsible for something that has created a greater discussion of history, of place, of ownership, and in fact, it's actually brought a whole lot of change. So if you're non-Indigenous like me, I've got a couple of tips of what you can do next if you want to take things further. If it's possible, always get a local elder to present the Welcome to Country, for they've been appointed by their nation to share the message from the people whose land on which you stand. And if you can't get an elder, if you're doing an acknowledgement yourself, maybe go deeper than just reeling off the appropriate words. Make sure that you and your organisation are doing more than simply paying lip service. Make sure that you're doing the work behind the scenes to educate yourself, to donate to various Indigenous organisations, and to practice what you preach. It's pretty simple. And in a perfect world, knowledge leads to understanding, which could in turn encourage pride in our real history and its ancient culture, rather than the divided one we're experiencing now. Senator Lydia Thorpe has a few thoughts too on what else needs to happen. And after all I've learnt through doing this, I reckon it's time to make it happen too.
Look, the only mechanism I can think of is treaty. Mm-hmm. And all of the things that we're doing now are building a case for that. And, you know, an acknowledgement or a welcome to country is, as you say, it's a step towards doing the right thing. But, you know, we need a treaty. We need to end the war on Aboriginal people in this country. Mm. And we need to just have a very serious discussion about sovereignty, because we are sovereign people of these lands. The Australian Parliament says that they're the sovereign people of these lands. So let's negotiate what that means, what that looks like to go forward. And treaty is that mechanism. Treaty is a way where we can educate the whole country, who've been denied, mind you, the education in their lifetime through the white education system that denied truth to be told. This is an opportunity for all Australians to have a better understanding of what treaty is, and it is no threat to any Australian in this country. It's something that will bring us together, unite us, and give us a reason to celebrate together and give us something to celebrate together, which we don't currently have.
No, it feels like there's so much still to be fought, and I think talking to Gary, it was pretty sad to see, you know, in his eyes, how far we haven't come. And it, given, you know, he was really working on the ground, but as you said, back in 1973, when his version of Welcome to Country was performed to probably a predominantly white audience, that's a long time ago. I'd like to think we could have come further than where we're at now. But, yeah, it's...
Well, we're patient people, Miss.
Yep.
You know, we're... been around for 240 years getting colonised, and you know, having all our human rights violated. Prior to that, we were here thousands and thousands of generations. So we're not going anywhere and we'll continue to resist and hold our own. And I think that the more we do that, the more all Australians are learning and slowly coming on board to seek justice with us, but also to, you know, have an identity that we can all be proud of.
Litmus Media.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.